Hey everyone, welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I am not Steve Sipo. Steve is... Where is Steve? I don't think he told us.
He didn't.
Steve
is... He just...
Steve, the man of mystery, is not here, so you're stuck with me hosting this week. I'm joined by Thomas Henderson and Ken Levin. How is everyone doing this week?
Warm.
It's fucking same, terrible, man.
It's been rough the last few days.
I made the mistake of finally having like a combination housewarming birthday thesis defense for my roommate party yesterday. On the day it hit 95 for the first time this year, needless to say, my apartment was a sweatbox.
Oh, yeah.
Just wonderful. The dog's been panting all day. It's not fun. So, yeah, the weather not great. It would be nice if it would storm. I have no way to segue this into promote extend trade because I'm not Steve. So we'll just move right into the promote extend trade rather than continuing to bitch about the weather. So on this day in 1930, Lou Gehrig became the first player with three home run games, which in and of itself is kind of crazy to me, right? That it took until 1930 for one person to have three home run games really demonstrates how much those Yankee teams just totally changed the way that the game was played. But going off that, promote extend trade these three home run games from Mets in chronological order. And these are all fairly relatively recent. So first one, August 30th, 1999, Edgardo Alfonso goes 6-for-6 with three homers at the Astrodome. He was hitting like .120 before, and that got his season right. But it's still just a on the road three home run game compared to the next one. July 12, 2015, Kirk Nieuwenhuis becomes the first Met to hit three home runs at home. That was against the Diamondbacks. And then finally, later in that 2015 season, Yoenis Cespedes goes 5-for-6 at Coors, falls a triple short of the cycle, three home runs, seven RBI, a stolen base. It's the only game that's ever kind of hit all those arbitrary benchmarks. But good Lord, he absolutely crushed the ball in that one. So which Met three home run games are we promoting, extending, or trading?
These are all really cool for different reasons, too.
Yeah.
Like, 6-for-6 is insane. Like, just, like, to hit three homers in a game and also go 3-for-3 outside of that is nuts. That, and Cespedes was, like, right after they got him. Like, it was really close to the deadline.
That so was, like, the first game we really got to see Cespedes go bonkers.
And it that's who they got, you know?
He had been, like, if I recall correctly, he had been, like, maybe mediocre is too harsh, but pedestrian up until that point, right? It was like, okay, this is fine. Put another way, I was still kind of regretting giving up Michael Fulmer for Yoenis Cespedes at that point. And then he went just nuclear for the next 2 months. And
just like,
Yeah. And I'm not going to rehash that trade about whether you could have predicted that or not, but oh boy, he was, as Keith would say, un fuego.
He was always really good as a Met, Cespedes, like when he played. He just kept getting hurt. It was unfortunate, but.
Yes.
And then Nieuwenhuis is hilarious. Like,
that might be my favorite.
It is.
It's definitely my favorite.
Like the equivalent to today would be like Paddy Mazeika hitting three dingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible?
How do you do it three times, let alone once? Like, when Nieuwenhuis hit one home run.
Kirk home run was special because they threw it into the one little spot of the zone that he could cover. You know? For him to do that three times.
I was recapping that day. I had a lot of fun writing the recap for that one. Just... Captain Kirk takes the Met where no Mets have gone before. Like, yeah, this is good. Yes. I also always loved Kirk.
Me too. I always liked him.
He was not a great player, but he was a totally fine fourth or fifth outfielder for a little bit.
He played
football, if you didn't know. If you were not aware, he played football. I think we're all in agreement. We'll extend that one.
Yeah, it's for the pure fun factor of it. Like when a rando does something like that, it's way more fun to me than like Edgardo Alfonso is like a top tier Met for that era, you know? Like,
yes.
He's one of the guys when like you're a little kid and you're a Mets fan, like Fonzie was a big part of the Mets. So And Cespedes was like a big deal for the 2015 Mets, but Kirk, that's great.
The one I debated slipping in here is that I think it was the last game of the season. Lucas Duda randomly hit three home runs at home in a game the Mets lost by a bunch, and that didn't change the standings.
I remember that. The most Lucas Duda.
It was like, did he just hit a third home run this game? What? Holy shit. I didn't even notice. And it's very like Lucas Duda. The Lucas Duda of it all was great. But I figured we'd wind up not appreciating that one relative to these other three. So, three homer games, always fun. Please do more power hitting Mets. Please.
I mean,
fix
with
the ball
the way it is, like a one home run game should be celebrated as much.
No kidding. I don't understand how Pete hit that ball 450 whatever feet it was with these balls. Like that's absurd. But
it might have been 500 with a juice ball. Like
no kidding.
Like. He destroyed that thing.
It was vaporized. We're going off on a long tangent. All right, so that was three home run games. Let's move into our draft update. We're missing Steve, but his guys haven't played since approximately 1996, so we're not actually missing anything on that
Lucas,
front.
None of them were born in 1996.
You know? You make a good point there, Cam.
They were all like negative four in 1996.
The best kind of correct.
Yes, yes. I promote you to bureaucrat level 12. Okay, so I'll go first here since I'm already talking. Dylan Beavers. I love Dylan Beavers' week. He went 2-for-9, no home runs, struck out once, and walked 7 times in 3 games. Yeah, I love give me my on-base percentage gods. He's hitting .292, .429, .639. It's a .1067 OPS. He's getting pitched around a bit. He's also fallen out of the lead in the Pac-12 in homers. He's behind Carter Graham at Stanford. I don't really care. Same as always, and I appreciate his. I mean, that's, to me, perhaps the most interesting part of his kit, that as a recent recent convert to hitting full time, his plate discipline is so good. You'd almost expect him to kind of be swinging at everything because he hasn't been doing this for as long, but.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, dude has an idea of what to do at the plate. Whether the contact skills hold up, still a question, but, interesting long term. Brock Porter had another, start against Catholic Center. That was the team he threw 4 no hit innings against, to start his season. He'd added 7 more no-hit innings, 16 strikeouts. He also walked 4, so a little wild tonight. But it's more of the same stuff. Like, he's too good for high school. We're not learning anything here. I did realize he's actually hitting .519 on the season with 4 homers and 33 plate appearances. So.
Oh, so two-way player Brock Porter?
yeah, clearly. And I wish I was that good an athlete, like 20% of that level of athlete at, like, anything I tried to do, but... Alas.
Yeah.
Both of these guys, Porter's might be the first arm off the board. Beavers might go in the back of the first, holding steady at this point in the draft process. All right, Thomas, you're up.
So, as you know, Brandon Barrera has shut himself down for the rest of the season just to get ready for his next level, his next step in pro ball, and in whether it's pro ball or Vanderbilt, whichever it may be, which... I'm not sure which one it would be. I could see him going either way, like I said last week. I think if a team kind of drafts him high enough, he'll go. It's one of those, obviously. And Gavin Cross had a bit of a down week. He dropped his average below .320 for the first time in a while for the season.
He's trashed teams in the top 10. Let him fall to the Mets.
He still has an above .400 on base percentage and is slugging .618. So he's just... Like, sometimes high school guys are too good for the level. He's too good for college at this point. He's just, I'm sure the metal bats help him slug and stuff, but also you don't do that without real talent. He's going to be a guy who's going to be one of the better college bats. He also made a hell of a play in center field, like a nice dive and catch in the gap. He threw a runner out. I think they were trying to score either on a single or a sacrifice fly. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he made a really nice throw to throw a runner out. Like, He also brings defense to the table. Like, he's not gonna, I don't think he's gonna be a gold glove level center fielder or corner outfielder, but he's gonna be a more than, he's not gonna be Kyle Schwarber out there. Like, that's not the type of athlete you're getting.
Wow, that was a crazy catch.
Did you see it?
I just pulled it up on Twitter. Yeah, that was
it's like a catch, man. Like, that's a really nice play. And he could do stuff like that, and even if he's not a long-term center fielder, I think he'll be more than good enough in a corner to give you really quality defense. So, I mean, really, the only thing that's going to hold a guy like him back is teams want guys who are younger. Like, teams want 18-year-olds and high school kids. Like, they're just going to go first. And that's why the Schwarbers and the Confortos fall to 12 or 13 or whatever. And those work too, you know? And good thing the Mets picked there. So I could definitely see him being in the Mets range. And I could definitely see the Mets being like, if they want a college bat, I don't really know if you get a better one at 11 if he's still there, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I forget where I saw this. I mean, since the Mets have such a weird front office structure, you can't glean as much from what all the mock drafts are saying they'll do. Because there's like 16 factions in this front office, and who the hell knows who's talking to people and also who's actually running the draft. But if they're being consistently mocked Chase DeLauder, you have to think that if Gavin Cross was there, they'd be interested in that demographic.
Exactly. It's like if they're interested in a college bat at that time, then they're going to get a good one, and they're going to get probably one of the guys we've talked about, you know, just because we've talked about the really good ones for the most part. So.
Right. Right. Ken, what do you got?
So Cam Collier's season ended. But Jace Jung played 3 games versus Oklahoma. He went 3-for-13 with a homer, a double, 2 walks against 6 Ks, which brings his season line down to earth a little bit at 350, 492, 660. That's an 1152 OPS.
Just absolute garbage.
I know. Yeah. In 200 at-bats, he's hit 14 homers with 33 extra base hits and 55 walks against 34 Ks.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
He's young too, right? Like, we talked about this before?
I think so.
I know you just said his name, and I've already forgotten if it's Jace or Josh. Jace. He's 21. Jace. Yeah.
Okay, so he's not too young, but still, like, he's good.
Yeah, definitely not going to be there at 11.
No way. Oh,
some shit, crazy shit would have to happen.
Who knows? The baseball draft, crazy shit does happen, but yeah, I would be...
There's a reason if he's fallen that low, I'd say.
Probably, yeah.
Something and not ideal has come to light.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the college guys who usually have... It's like, people are going to say, well, Khalil Watson went 16 or whatever it was last year. He's a high school guy, like, that happens. The college guys typically go where you expect them to go.
You can do pretty advanced modeling about what this guy's going to be able to do in the minors, and you know, the band of uncertainty is generally considered, like, much smaller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's going to be on the Nationals, and we're going to have to deal with
I'm worried about that, too, yeah.
Should we do a Brady House update? Let's do that real quick. Brady House fan graphs. Brady House is hitting 318, 402, 449.
Yeah, he's good.
And his strikeout rate is below 24%, and that was the big question mark about him. Boy, howdy, am I glad we let him go to the Nats.
Don't worry, though. We get 2 picks in this objectively way better draft. Just the deepest draft there ever was.
God. I mean, I'm sitting here talking up Brock Porter and Chase DeLauder. We'd rather have
House, right?
But yes.
I would have rather have House than pretty much anyone we've talked about, I think.
I'd rather have Cross than House.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that's fair.
But Cross is a guy we're hoping slips 4 or 5 slots to the Mets so that he's there, he might not even be at that spot. Sandy Alderson drafts. They do these things. All right, so that's our draft update. We will now move into a much more depressing segment about the minor league team performances from the past week. And, oh, buddy. Syracuse went 1-for-4 with a rainout. They are 14-26. They are dead last in the International League East, and they already have a negative 70 run differential through 40 games.
Is that good?
I'm not sure. Is that good? Is it bad?
Define good. Define.
This is a real I mean, I don't think any of us were. No, I think I actually expected Syracuse to be cromulent, to borrow the relevant Mason Avenue parlance here, and they've been an abject disaster. Rough week for Nick Plummer. 63 rated runs created plus this last week. He had one hit in 9 at-bats, struck out twice. Mark Vientos is still striking out 30% of the time, which is not what you want, though he's been somewhat better lately. He struck out almost 40% of the time last week. And Khalil Lee is in A-ball. So everyone we cared about on this roster is either not doing so great recently or totally completely off the roster. There is some relevant Syracuse news. We are probably going to get a Thomas Supucky start next week. I have not had a chance to watch Supucky, but I think you guys have seen him a little bit more this year. The AAA stats look decent, but is that deceptive? Is he still the Thomas Supucky we remember from last season?
Yeah, his stuff isn't just there. I don't think he's going to be able to get many major league batters out.
He's not going to take that next step we hoped he would, you know, as he got further out from surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically it, which sucks, and it is what it is, though, at this point. Like, hopefully he could be a spot start guy who does a little bit for a few innings and then gets bailed out by the offense and pulled, but we'll see.
I mean, what do you think is missing? Like, is he just not – the curveball just isn't snapping off like it used to? Is the fastball just underwhelming? Is there anything specific, or is it more just the – general oof that he produces.
He's still getting whiffs on the curveball, but that's really it. Like, like that's kind of the whole package at this point, where before his fastball was, like, very good. Like pre-surgery, Zapucki, like, he had a good fastball.
Yeah, he was, like, 94, 95, and then he came back from surgery. He was, like, 90, 92.
And it's still there, so.
It's still 90, 92. There isn't as much life on it, and he can't command the breaking ball well enough to...
Like, he still gets whiffs on it, but he gets AAA whiffs on it. Like,
right.
Yeah. It's not a good enough pitch for him to spam it and have it work in the big leagues.
I mean, this plays into what we were talking about with Dylan Lesko a couple weeks back, that the Mets just can't rehab Tommy John successfully, it seems like. And Supucky's a relative success story for the organization, and we're still talking about how his velocity isn't back, and he had to have the ulnar's transposition surgery. And... that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's just at this point, how many times can the Mets mess up Tommy John before we're just like, they're going to mess up all of them, you know?
Right. It also feels like in a better organization where they didn't need him as starting depth, you could put him in the bullpen and say, all right, just spam, you're going to throw your curveball 60% of the time, because that's what relievers do these days, and that might work, but the Mets don't have any starting pitching depth left, and here we are with Thomas Supucky starting against the Giants next week. I'm sure this will go wonderfully.
Thomas Supucky versus Jake Junis.
Oh, boy. What a marquee matchup. Two of the best teams in the NL, folks. Jake Junis versus Thomas Supucky. Darren Ruff going to hit three bombs. Yeah, that's enough on Syracuse. We didn't talk much about Syracuse because I don't want to talk about Syracuse. Don't really want to talk about the next team either. Binghamton went 1-5 against the Akron Rubber Ducks. They are 12-26 and also dead last in the Eastern League Northeast. But their run differential's a little better, only -64 in two fewer games. Rough week all around for all the prospects. I know Ronnie Mauricio had a 4 RBI day today. Don't at me. He struck out 40% of the time this week.
Yeah, like his hot week is a 300 on base percentage. Like,
right.
It's still the same problems are still there. He's just making more contact this week.
Right, exactly. 55 weighted for Beatty the past week, 65 for Alvarez. I don't think any of us have major concerns about this. It's just going to take a little bit longer than maybe we had hoped.
Yeah, it's more like I don't think we see them this year, but okay, that's fine. Like, If that's how it is this year, then I'd rather them not mess up these players.
Yeah, I think you would have liked to see. I mean, it'd be wonderful if Alvarez had continued. I'd like to,
Beatty is the one for me, but.
I mean, Alvarez might be the one that could have the bigger impact if he was catching, but that always seemed a pipe dream to me. Beatty, I still think Beatty might be up towards the tail end of this year. But yep. It sure would be nice if he had killed it and could be the starting third baseman right now. Eduardo Escobar looks a little bit cooked.
Yeah, I'm worried about Escobar in talking about the major league side of things. But it would be nice if we could get that from Beatty. But also, I would much rather, like I said, the Mets take it slow than think that it's a problem and say, okay, even if Beatty isn't performing super well, bring him up anyway. Like,
it's not
worth it. Yeah, it's not worth it.
I'm mildly concerned about the strikeouts, but he's actually making the bad ball changes I wanted to see. So it's fine. Hopefully he gradually improves. Moving on down to Brooklyn, and we finally have a winning record. They went 4-2 against Wilmington. They're 17-19. They're third in the South Atlantic League North. They are well back of both Aberdeen and Wilmington, despite taking 4 of 6 from Wilmington this week. Certainly a better performance from the top two teams in the organization, which quite ironic because I think most of us imagine Brooklyn would be awful and Binghamton and Syracuse should be a little bit better than this. Now, that's because there's not much to talk about on this Brooklyn roster. It's Jose Peroza and Jalen Palmer and a poo-poo platter of pitchers we don't really care about. Close to my heart, I will provide a Shervia Newton update. He has a 72 weighted runs created plus, and Price is Right rules. How many times did he strike out in 13 at-bats this week?
6.
Thomas nailed it. 6 times in 13 at-bats. His strikeout rate in Brooklyn is 36.7. Meet the new Shervia Newton, same as the old Shervia Newton. Again, I wish we could graft players together and give Jake Mangum Shervia Newton's physical tools and create a top 10 prospect.
Yeah, right.
If only.
He'd be the fourth outfielder right now.
yeah, probably. I do like Travis Jankowski, but yeah, probably. Not so good. And then finally, St. Lucie. St. Lucie went 3-3 against the Tampa Tarpons. Does anyone know what a tarpon actually is?
Their logo's a turtle, right?
Is it?
Is it? Or no, it's a little fish thing.
Is it a fish? A tarpon is indeed a fish.
Only it has a little hook in its mouth, I think. I'm trying to like think of off the top of my head because I've seen it a million times recapping these games.
You would think if their logo is the fish, that if they're named after fish, they wouldn't want their logo to be the fish dying, but it's neither here nor there. St. Lucie is 26-13. They're first in the Florida State League East. A league that has a 4-team division and a 6-team division, because that makes sense. I'm sure it's just due to geography. The Alex Ramirez update, I rated it a Keith because he's hitting 364, 400, 409 in the past week with a 136 weighted. That's the good stuff.
No clue why he's still there, but good for him.
I don't know either, honestly, because there was a recent slate of promotions, which we can talk about in a moment, but it seems like his strikeout rate is reasonable. He's maybe not walking as much as you'd like to see, but it's not like a hyper-aggressive approach, right? It's not a disaster. And he's killing the ball. What are we doing here?
Yeah, it's time for him to be in Brooklyn. Hopefully, the recent promotions, that means they're going to start actually promoting guys, and that means he's next up, hopefully, but we'll see.
Yes, well, we can talk about that in just a moment. All right, so now... we alluded to some other promotions. Alex Ramirez is not one, but the Mets did make a couple moves down in St. Lucie with their pool of recent college pitchers, and they've promoted both Mike Vassell, who was their 8th-round pick, and Carson Seymour, who was their 6th-round pick. Vassell in 7 starts, 34 innings pitched, 9.26 K9, 2.91 walks per 9, and a 1.85 ERA. Quite good. I wouldn't go so far as to call that dominating, particularly for a college pitcher against players this young. But it's a nice result from a round 8 senior sign. Was he a senior sign? Yeah. I know he was an underslot, but I don't remember if he was a senior or not. They seem to have fixed whatever UVA messed up with Vassell. which is becoming a bit of a trend across baseball at the moment. They might actually have a little something here. I don't want to count chickens before they hatch, but the few clips I've seen, I like the what his stuff looks like. Obviously, we don't have the metrics on it, but encouraging start for him. Carson Seymour also got – go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just saying it's what you want to see, and I'm glad they're promoting him already.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real reason I'm still be there.
At least Ramirez is young for the level, but these are college guys, college guys. We should be pushing them. I was surprised they started a lot of them here in the first place, actually.
Me too. And I kind of thought it was going to be even quicker than this, considering it's like the end of May, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least it's not August or like June or July or something when they're doing it.
At least it's not long-time listeners will remember a lot of our complaining about the Sandy Alderson era. Oh. Promotion schedule. They had very specific benchmarks prospects had to hit in terms of their statistical performance, and if you weren't hitting those benchmarks, you weren't getting promoted. Kind of ridiculous, but at least we've moved past that. Anyway, Carson Seymour, who went two rounds prior to Vassell, has been good, not quite as good. He's been working both in relief and starting, but I think it's mostly like piggyback relief, so whatever. Seven games, 30.1 innings pitched, 8.07 K9, 2.67 walks per nine, and a 1.19 ERA. So the peripherals aren't quite as good. The bottom line numbers are just as good. Again, if you're putting up a ERA below 1.5 and you're a couple years older than the dudes you're facing, you should be promoted and you can learn more at the next level.
Yep.
Now, I don't recall... Were we unanimous in which of these college pitchers we were high on at the start of the season, or were we all over the place? Because the guy I liked has not been great.
Oh yeah, Hamill.
Yeah,
Hamill. I'm a little Vassell, but I think we were all pretty high on Hamill.
Yeah. Okay. Well, can you win the Vassell sweepstakes? So congratulations. But yeah, Hamill. Well, Hamill hasn't been the worst, but Hamill's not been good. Hamill was the fourth-round pick. Seven games started, 8.78 K9. That's pretty good. And then we get to the 5.74 walks per nine and a 4.4 ERA.
Not good.
It sounds like they're messing with his pitch mix a lot. The Mets perhaps are not the most well-equipped organization to optimize his stuff. And it also might be that his stuff just isn't that good, right? If you're spinning, it doesn't matter how high your spin rate is, if it's not good movement, not good axis, not good velocity, not good control, it doesn't matter. And that's how you wind up walking almost six guys per nine innings.
The walks are bad. It's a problem. The other stuff, if he's getting hit and stuff, if he's working on things, that is what it is. But if you're walking 6 for 9, that's like, ooh.
Yeah.
And if you're getting lapped by guys pretty much lower than you in the preseason totem polls here, even though it's only May, you're already getting lapped a bit like that. It's a little concerning. Obviously, the door's not closed on Hamill, but also, as much as my eyes have opened up for a Vassell type or a Seymour type, they've also opened my eyes for a Hamill thing in a different direction, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, all this said, I don't hate the process here, right? I hate the process of not signing Rocker, obviously, but if you're going to wind up cutting a lot of these later picks, cutting in terms of saving money, I think they picked an interesting pool of guys, but we have to be, I think sanguine is the word I'm looking for here, about what their realistic probable outcomes are, even if we like them. And there were things to like about Hamill. I don't think we were totally off base in expressing some optimism, but it's important to remember that, this is still a fourth-round cheap college pitcher, and there's a reason he's that. Other teams have scouts, too. But like I said, Hamill has not been the worst pitcher here. That goes to, unfortunately, Levi David, who in 8 games has been working exclusively in relief. 7.1 innings pitched, 13.5 K9, 15.95 walks per nine innings.
That's insane.
I don't think that's good.
I liked Levi David a fair bit, but also the concern was he throws interesting stuff and has no clue where it's going. And it was like, well, yeah, here you are. You know, like, he's going to obviously going to have to clean it up. But it's just, it's one of those things where, like, this was the worry. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the big red flag coming in. And that's why I think it was, like, their seventh or something. I can't remember where they picked him.
He was nine.
Nine, yeah, okay. I knew he was later than a lot of these guys, and he's also, I think, the decision to make him a reliever only is the correct one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, shit, man, you got to throw strikes. I don't care if you're a nice round pick or not. You know, like, even if you're a reliever.
There's a degree of wildness you can get away with, right? And he's striking guys out. You can't get away with this much wildness. Like,
I mean, like, how many relievers out there really are, like, like, even Edwin Diaz, as elite as he's been this year, is not the most like, that's just not what it is. Like, you're wild if you're a reliever, but
peak Adam Ottavino or, like, recent Craig Kimbrell are, like, they're, of course, doing this in the major leagues, which is very different, but they're striking out 15 and walking 6 for 9. It's like, all right, I don't like this all the time, but it's working.
Yeah, you're around the zone enough where if you are, like, wild, you're close enough where you have to swing. Like, you see it now with Ottavino. Like, Ottavino today, we're recording on Sunday, was wild, but also he settled down a little bit. And as long as the stuff is near the zone, you have to swing. Because otherwise, you could get dotted up and strike out, and that's it. Like, and his stuff moves so much that if it starts in the zone and drops out, then it's going to be difficult if he's sometimes throwing strikes. But if you're walking like 15 per nine or whatever, just stand there. Like,
I'm just not going to swing the bat. Right.
Yeah, like, why would you ever swing? Like, maybe he dots you up and you strike out, but the likelihood is that he's just going to throw curveballs in the dirt and you're going to walk to first base.
I loved the nickname I had. He was going to be Curve Your Enthusiasm. So many good headlines out of that. And God damn it. But again, this is why he's a money-saving draft pick, right? Because this was always the realistic outcome, but if we were intrigued by the profile. Also, real quick on Adam Ottavino, can we stop bringing Adam Ottavino into the game with men on base?
Like, I mean, who else are we going to break in?
God, you're not wrong.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem. Who else are we bringing in?
But anytime Ottavino takes the mound, there's a pretty decent chance he could just walk three straight guys.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the old Green Man tweet about Daniel Murphy, where it was like sometimes he's George eating the onion and sometimes he's George spotting the nickel from the dime from across the thing? Yes. That's Adam Ottavino out of the bullpen now. Like, I put it in Mason Avenue Slack today, but like, I have no idea if Adam Ottavino is going to be, like, untouchable or he's going to walk 10 people and lose the game. Like, and that's just what it is. Like, that's right where he is at this point.
I also was wondering to myself, did Adam Ottavino work better in Coors because his stuff moves too much? Who knows?
That's interesting.
That was just a wild idea, watching the doubleheader yesterday. But anyway, Levi David has a long way to go to even reach that level of viability. Right now, at this point, he's not a viable pitcher, and that's why he and Hamill aren't being promoted and Seymour and Vassell are. Hopefully we'll get another wave of promotions soon-ish and get Alex Ramirez up to Brooklyn, and then that Brooklyn roster will be more interesting. I don't think anyone else on St. Lucie is really going to get called up here. The other outfielders who are hitting, like Carlos Dominguez and I'm drawing a blank on De Los Santos or something along those lines.
I think it's Omar.
Omar, right, that's it. They are striking out like 40% of the time. They should not be promoted. So,
a lot of guys are hitting the ball hard down there, but also at the end of the day, they're young and they should be in. Mm-hmm. Let them chill there for a year.
Exactly. And if they,
like, kind of do the Alex Ramirez thing. Any guesses on Khalil Lee's current stat line at single A?
Shit.
150, 275, 300.
I'm going to go better than that. I'm going to say 230, 400, 400.
You're very close and you got one of them right. 240, 367, 400 where are the strikeouts? With 9 strikeouts in 7 games.
That's... What happened, right? Like,
yeah, it's just all of a sudden he's missing every pitch that's thrown in the zone. It's wild. Like,
we knew he had contact issues, but this has gone from you're probably going to strike out, you're going to be Kirk Nieuwenhuis basically, to you literally cannot hit.
Like he went 0 for 5 with 3 strikeouts either today or yesterday and single in St. Lucie. Like I don't know how that's possible. Like I don't know where it went. Then honestly, like I thought it was kind of harsh the Mets doing that, but also I kind of see their point if he's going to even whiff that much in single A, you know. If he's striking out like that in St. Lucie. And I mean he was bad in Binghamton or in Syracuse rather.
Yeah. That's really depressing. I mean, the athletic. I wonder if he's injured or something, or just lost a little athleticism for some reason or another. Very disappointing, though. That's super unfortunate. Because it had the potential to be a really interesting profile, even as a bench outfielder, and now he can't hit in a ball. So. Still don't hate the process of picking him up, though. I honestly
no, and also it's not over. Like, no. Obviously, it's not the path you want to take, but like Roy Halladay did something similar where he went all the way down to single A or whatever it was and fixed himself, and there he was. Like, I'm not saying that's going to happen on the hitter side of things, but you can reinvent yourself and figure things out at a different level. It's just, will it happen?
And like, what they gave up, not a huge, like, Freddy Valdez, he's 20 years old and isn't in full season ball right now. Didn't have a home run in the complex last year, and he's supposed to be a hulking power hitting corner outfielder. So,
yeah,
whatever. And Josh Winkowski, I haven't actually looked up in a minute.
He ended up, I think he started recently for the Red Sox, like did a spot start for them. But
he has not made the major. Ooh, shit! The Mets could actually probably use Josh.
Yeah, Winkowski they could use him. But yeah, I was.
Josh Winkowski has a 2.1 ERA and a 2.5 FIP in AAA right now for Boston. So. Maybe it wasn't the best idea, but whatever.
He's throwing 95-96 in Triple A. And he's a candidate to start one of the doubleheaders, but I don't think they ended up going with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he would probably be in the Met rotation right now instead of Thomas Cipucci.
Yeah, and he probably would have been in the bullpen doing up and down stuff before that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, again, though, I mean, I don't think the idea was terrible on its face, and you're going to lose some of these trades sometimes. It happens. I don't know if either of you disagree on that point, but I was the Khalil Lee fan among the four of us.
I also liked Lee, and also I thought that kind of from a need-based situation, sometimes like the Mets don't have a ton of upper minors pitching prospects, but I feel like they saw him as a better chance of being an impact major leaguer as a bench bat in the outfield or something like that. Where, so I get it. Like doing those kind of prospects for prospects, challenge trades are kind of interesting to me when like you see two guys who are underperforming in different places and clearly was like a top 100 guy before. I'm pretty sure like there was a lot of pedigree there with him. And it's very easy to look at him when he's going right and be like, I could understand why you would be a top 100 prospect, you know? So I don't necessarily not get it. It's just they bet on the wrong guy this time, and it happens. Like, it is what it is. You move on. You spend a bunch of money, and you sign players anyway to fix your mistake.
Yes. The ultimate solution of more money.
Yeah, I mean, really, honestly.
No, like, I'm not trying to be – I know I always sound sarcastic. I was not trying to be sarcastic. Money does solve all of these problems, yes.
Yeah.
So, I think that's all we have for relevant news this week. There's only one real breakout guy to talk about, and little things are a little slow, so kind of just in maintenance mode for the moment. Probably will start changing as we get some of the Dominican signings and what else moving into actual games. So, look forward to that over the next couple months.
I'm just begging the Mets to make Brooklyn interesting,
yes,
so I could go to some games.
I need a reason to sit on the train for 2.5 hours. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. So
agreed.
Anyway, in the meantime, if you've got questions, comments, concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at elvlahostee43. Steve is at Steve Saipa. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SADMetsSeason, which is SCN. As always, you can listen or subscribe to the podcast through Apple Podcasts. We encourage you to leave a review. It helps us out. Or you can do the same wherever you get your podcasts. So until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.